result of 1:30 race.
Result of 1:30. Oh,
insert stop press. Result of 1:30.
Time to town.
Evening news. Evening news. Thanks, Mike. Rising latest. Rising latest.
Yeah, give us a copy, lad.
Oh, evening, Mr. Evans.
Now.
I tipped the winner, then.
Winner? I tipped 1,000 winners.
Educated Evans by Edgar Wallace. Narrated by Freddie Jones. Starring Roy Hudd as Evans, Andrew Sachs as Inspector Pine, Michael Roberts as the Miller, and Pat Coombs as Mrs. Rankin. This week's episode, Inside Information.
It had been a dismal spring for Educated Evans. The world's premier turf advisor, known more modestly to his few remaining clients as a tipster, was feeling badly let down. It was, moreover, on this particular evening, the neat square of sky visible through his window in Camden Town that Evans held directly responsible. His two rooms over the stable in Bayham Mews faced west, and the previous evening's sunset had conjured the pink and yellow racing colours of Lord Claverley. Evans had duly notified over 300 clients that his horse, Barleycorn, was a stone certainty for the next day's 3 o'clock at Newmarket. Barleycorn, with a shocking disregard for celestial omens, had managed a bare 20 yards... and collapsed.
Oh, there it goes. The last of the kindling.
The tipster's sole hope of financial recovery now lay in the Newbury Spring Handicap, and settling himself by the meagre stove, Evans embarked on a detailed study of the card.
7-1. Not on the map. Polecat? Yes, Polecat. He likes the course. Likes it too well, though. Stopped to examine it more closely last time. Now, Rainbow. I wonder. No, can't see no Rainbow. Might be in with a chance.
Taking the evening air, Evans?
What's that? Why, bless my life and soul.
Sorry, Miss Nardle, your door's on the latch.
The visitor was a tall man, dressed entirely in black, with a broad-rimmed felt hat pulled over his eyes.
Oh, what's this? The Newbury Spring Handicap.
Exactly.
He was chewing a straw, and by that fact alone, Evans would have recognised him. Detective Sergeant William Arbuthnot Challoner was otherwise known as the Miller.
I heard you were giving up as a tipster, Evans.
Me, Mr. Miller? Giving up? Educated Evans, the man who tipped Penwiper at 50-1, giving up?
It's not true. You've been short of funds.
Money? I never forget the famous King Morpheus. Everything he laid his mitts on turned to gold. Owing to which, he got filled teeth and everybody thought he was American. Do you know the main...
Do you know, Evans, where you were between 7:30 and 9:15 on the night of the 8th of this month? The night, in fact, of the Seven Oaks burglary.
I most certainly do.
Yeah, but does anybody else know? Anybody whose word would be accepted by a police magistrate gifted with imagination and a profound distrust of the criminal classes?
Most assuredly, Mr. Miller. My good friend, Mr. Harold Sefferell, for one.
Sefferell, the bookie? Honest Harry.
It so happened I was also in the company of that well-known and most highly respected publican, Mr. Julius Corgan.
Julius Corgan's the man who put the U into guilty.
Oh, look, upon my word of honour, Mr. Miller, I'm as free of guilt as the far-famed little princes.
Oh,
King John III kept locked in...
Save your education, Evans. Come on.
Hey.
I'll have to hold you at the station. It's a case that Inspector Pine's taking the most particular interest in.
Oh, now, wait a minute. God...
Lord, strengthen our brethren in the temperance movement.
Inspector Pine was something more than an inspector of police. He was a lay preacher, a temperance orator, and a social reformer. The welfare groups he subscribed to were abundant, but his fondest thoughts were always reserved for the Brotherhood. This worthy society met in a little tin hall off Stebbington Street, and here the inspector was able to speak, often at some length, on a regular weekly basis.
And the tipster!
We mentioned the Newbury Spring Handicap, Evans.
We did indeed, Mr. Miller. And I've a stone certain if ever I had one. A solid pinch.
George Canfin's got Blue Chuck running, but he's not fancied.
Canfin? He's Lord Clanwattock's son, you know. Yes, that owner's as hot as they come. Every time he passes a zoo, the snakes stand up and touch their hats to him.
So you think that Blue Chuck might...
Mr. Miller, if you'd come to me this evening as, well, a sportsman to a sportsman, I'd have given you my £5 special for Newbury. The winner for free. I'd even have thrown in the Lingfield 1 o'clock tomorrow.
At 1 o'clock? I've already got a fiver on Toffee Town.
You'd have slept a sight more soundly if you'd have had a word with me first.
I suppose, given the trading of certain information, I could decide to check your witnesses before taking you in, Evans. Given that is the trading of certain vital information...
Lingfield?
Lingfield it is.
Well, you can sleep soundly, Mr. Miller. I'm tipping Toffee Town myself.
You croft!
And gracious me if we're not standing right opposite the Dog and Kettle. Sleep the sleep of the righteous, Mr. Miller!
Evans! This alibi better be of the cast-iron variety.
Given the state of his fortunes at that moment, it was curious that Evans should have found himself in such proximity to the Dog and Kettle. It had been in this hostelry that Evans, albeit a rather younger and less crumpled Evans, had first been dubbed educated. The large bar had been crowded. For on that far-off day, Evans had provided no less than 3 winners at Pontefract, and the beaming landlord, Joe Tasket, hurried to his service.
Congratulations, Evans. 3 winners and those odds, eh? Tell us now, a success like that, what does it feel like?
Well, now, Mr. Tasket...
It was possibly the shock of this unhoped-for success that had left Evans dumbfounded. His brain whirred. Desperately, he tried to recall the speeches of past victors. Henry V, Cromwell, Napoleon. Characters ancient and modern flashed before him. Event, crowded event. But for Evans, no single occasion quite measured up to his own magnificent triumph.
He's speechless.
No. It's just, as Alexander the Great said to his lady friend, she, of course, being Cleopatra, whose needle we all admire. And here, as you know, he was only quoting the far-famed King Alfred, who, meeting lewd creature Borgia, the female criminal of the continent, and she who tried to poison the neighbours, he said, as far as the drink's concerned, I'll stick to me usual.
My heavens, you've a turn of phrase. Alexander the Great, eh?
Oh, yes, it was shortly before he led his elephants over the Alps, you know.
What an education. There's your drink, then, Evans. Or should it be educated, Evans?
Educated Evans it is!
He meant for educated Evans!
As Rasputin, the popular mad monk, used to always say, all the best.
The pattern had been set, but it was as well that Evans did not recall the incident as he stepped into the Dog and Kettle on this particular occasion.
Evening!
I never thought you'd have the nerve, Evans, showing your face in here. Called yourself a tipster. I lost half a night's takings on Barleycorn.
Well, it were a freak occurrence. My information, as ever, was top grade. I had it from the cousin of Lord Cleverley's chauffeur himself.
Did you now?
In fact, Mr. Tosky, in the light of my past successes, I was hoping you might see a way clear to
No, me. Evans, no. If you're on the cads, you're in the wrong pub. Everyone here's lost his bob on Barleycorn and knows that Lossmore has sat at home sober. Yeah, get out, Evans, you're bad for business.
Right. Bad for...
It was, if you recall, Mary, Queen of the Scots, who on a self-same occasion...
Out of my pub, Evans.
Well, if that's how it stands, Mr. Tuskett, I'm already gone.
And he calls himself educated. Can't think how he's got the neck. Yeah, right. Last orders, please.
Ingratitude. The man's out of his saddle.
Now, the Newbury Spring Handicap.
Ooh, there he goes, Inspector Payne. Evans.
Ah, yes, indeed. Evans.
Oh, if only Camden Town could be free of the likes of him, we'd have an easier task.
Ah, true words, Mrs. Rankin, perceptive words.
Yes, I did, note, by the by, Inspector, that my Mr. Rankin has not yet received his invitation to the Brotherhood's next suppression of gambling meeting.
Oh.
No, I trust there's no hint of laxity creeping into your work.
Laxity?
Yes.
Laxity, Mrs. Rankin, in my work? You might as well accuse St. Paul of frivolousness. Rest assured, my good lady. The epistle is receiving our most urgent attention. Good night to you all.
No! It's always me what gets left with the banner.
It was a forlorn Evans who arrived home at Bayham Mews that night, and the cracked mirror beside the washbowl reflected an unusual gloom in his features. Evans exchanged his overcoat for a blanket and fell straight onto the bed.
Polecat. Rainbow. Now... Blue Chuck. Oh. Blue Chuck.
Not many hours later, a silver dawn had broken over the Wiltshire Downs as three figures headed towards their vantage point for a private, indeed most secret, horse trial. The first two were George Canfin and his trainer Frank Ixon. The third, smaller figure, was limping after them at some little distance.
Miss Mavis must have tripped over, sir.
Huh? Yeah, foolish girl.
George!
I wonder about these rabbit holes.
Yes, sir. This spot's just about right, Mr. Canfin. We can see the full run, and yes, there's Blue Chuck just arriving with the others.
George! Quite soaked.
Shooting stick, Exon.
Here we are, sir.
Ah. Stopwatch. Bedbrook. Your flask.
Oh. If Blue Chuck's not in prime form, sir, I'm no trainer.
Not mine, certainly, Exon.
George Canfin's father, Lord Llanwattock, would say that money meant nothing to him, only the things he could buy with it. George himself liked money plain. He wanted all the money there was, and it hurt him to see the extraordinary amount of it that failed to come his way.
Oh, I tripped, George. I'm wet through and through.
Yes, damn Jew, look at it, right over the top of my boots.
Your boots?
Right, now stand over there, Mavis, and enjoy the trial.
Oh!
Prepare to signal the riders, Ixon.
Right, sir.
Blue Chuck's excellent form had been closely guarded. His odds for the Newbury Spring Handicap were still long, and George, who placed his not inconsiderable bets at the last viable moment, had every intention of keeping them that way.
Now, signal.
Yes, sir.
Whenever he won, as he did very often, George would always have sought out his friends before the race and advised them not to bet heavily.
Yes! Now, 1 minute, 39 seconds, and 4 clear lengths.
Well done, Blue Chuck.
Not a word, Ixon. But if that horse doesn't walk it at Newbury, nothing will.
Oh. Too true, sir.
Mavis, bring that shooting stick and look sharp.
All right.
I promised you a day to remember, didn't I? We're on the 10:33 to London.
Oh! Ouch!
Ow! Ow! Oh! Oh! Oh!
Evans, still wrapped in his blanket, might have slept even later that morning had he not been assailed by a sharp stab of cramp.
Oh! 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 Darn leg! Oh, I'd sooner be kicked by a runaway mare. Oh!
He paused in thought, then stooping to massage his leg, stooped further and pulled from under his bed an old shoebox. It contained the tipster's most treasured possessions, and nestling beside the cigarette end that Lord Derby had once dropped, lay a silver bracelet. This item had once been pressed into the tipster's palm in lieu of a debt, and Evan's fondness for it had, over the years, been increased by its many absences. Quickly, he exchanged the blanket for his overcoat, slipped the bracelet into his pocket, and headed off for the corner of Wellington Street, where three golden orbs hung over the small shop front of Mr. Albert Shanks.
Educated Evans.
Mr. Shanks, sir.
Of course, the Newbury Spring Handicap. You'll have a tip for me, Evans.
Eh? No. Oh, I do, of course, have a beauty.
Ah.
But it's my stable informants, you know. They wished me to remain silent until time ripens.
Ah, so it's true you've given up?
Certainly not. It just happens I'm here on business of a different order. And I'll trouble you, if I may, for the usual 7 and a tanner on my silverware.
Ah, oh, the bracelet. Home again. Ah, oh, there's quite a little tarnish.
I've affairs to deal with, Mr. Shanks, the 7 and 6, if you wouldn't mind.
5 shillings.
5?
The price of silver at present, Mr. Evans. Overheads. The Newbury Handicap.
As was said by one Doubting Thomas to the Lady of Godiva, that did the bareback ride down Coventry Street, it don't make sense to confuse issues.
5 shillings, Mr. Evans, and do please make your mind up.
Why,
seems I've another customer.
Evans turned slowly to see a tall, broad-shouldered figure now standing at his elbow.
Oh.
The newcomer was chewing a straw.
You can put that bracelet back in your pocket, Evans. We don't charge for bed and board at Critchley Street.
Why, Mr. Miller, sir...
Sorry, Evans. I've done my best, but both the witnesses left Camden Town yesterday morning with the Friends of the North London Brewers on a day's outing.
Well...
They have not as yet returned. Come on, I'm taking you in.
Oh, Mr. Miller, it's all horse fodder, I promise you.
Goodbye, Mr. Evans. I'll miss the bracelet.
George Canfin, meanwhile, had escorted Miss Mavis to one of the cheaper dining establishments on the Euston Road. He was, in truth, a touchy man by nature, and his touchiness had not been improved by the amount of old brandy consumed with dinner.
Fresh fish, best haddock and plaice, catfish steaks and the last on a cod roe, top as a pan, come and get
a it. A fellow diner had gazed over long at Miss Mavis and was still dabbing his bleeding nose in the restaurant as George, assisted by 2 waiters, arrived rather precipitately in the street.
Good evening, sir. A bit of an upset.
What? Oh, the constable. I have been the Honourable George Tennyson, son of Lord Lambert Roderick.
I don't doubt it, sir.
What about my...
Leave him to me, miss. You'll be able to visit him at Critchley Street Station in the morning.
George! George! I've got to get back to Marlborough!
In cell number 7, Critchley Street, Evans was still wondering which horse in the Newbury Handicap was numbered 7 on the card. His thoughts, however, were shortly disturbed as a new prisoner was brought down.
Hello. Another poor innocent laid low.
Take well, sir.
That's odd. Most odd indeed. I could swear this cell's starting to whiff of fresh haddock. It must be coming from this old ventilator.
Hands off, you little scoundrels. I am George Canvin, the son of Lord Lenwood.
What's that? Canvin the racehorse owner?
Damn shoot thick.
Mr. Canvin!
What?
Mr. Canvin, it's Evans, sir. Educated Evans, the far-famed turf advisor.
Tipster, go to hell.
Now, wait a minute, look, I could do you a bit of good. I've got a stone certainty...
Go to blazes, I tell you.
Well, look, no, I was just wondering about the Newbury Spring Handicap, Mr. Canvin. You've that old, sir, blue chap running. How's he shaping up, sir?
Good Lord. The scoundrels opened the damn ventilator.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? And him an honourable. God, millions he's worth.
For some minutes, Inspector Pine had been gazing at his office desk. There lay upon it a stack of 1,000 blank cards, and as yet, not one had been stamped with the announcement of the Brotherhood's next suppression of gambling meeting. As it so often transpired when the inspector was faced with an especially onerous task, he decided upon reflection not to approach the work directly. He paused, then slowly dropped to his knees on the cushion kept permanently at the side of his desk for precisely such occasions.
Oh Lord. Oh, silent prayer, I think, might be in order.
And the worthy inspector, his head resting comfortably on the plush seat of his office chair, prayed on. It was scarcely one half hour later that the miller sighted a brown and yellow chamois making its halting progress into Camden High Street. Drooping above its windscreen was a hand-painted banner that read, Friends of the North London Brewers.
Good evening, Dawkins. Would you happen to have Mrs. Seffro and Colgan aboard that mobile chicken coop?
I remember him boarding yesterday. I'll go and check. I'll drop you back at the station.
Oh, good gracious. I've come in...
Miracle has happened, sir.
What?
Evans. I've found two decent people who've supported alibi.
Yes. And the names of these two decent people are...
Mr. Harry Sefferall, for one, the well-known and highly respected commission agent.
What? Oh, there's a bookmaker?
A ratepayer of this district, sir. And the other gentleman's Mr. Corgan, of the Blue Heart.
Oh, a publican.
And a sinner, sir. But he is a well-known town councillor. I've asked the station sergeant to release Evans. He's bringing him up now.
Oh, very well, very well. Sergeant Challoner, you don't know anyone who could help me with these cards, I suppose?
I beg pardon, sir?
Well, it's just a matter of preparing these invitations. The most simple procedure.
I see.
Get off.
What?
Morning, Mr. Miller. Inspector Pine.
Another miracle, sir. I believe Evans here just volunteered for the job.
Job? What would that be, sir? A job of work?
Well, there'll be 7 and 6 months in it for you.
Come to think, yes, as it happens, I do seem to have a little time available.
Yes, if you'll excuse me, sir, I'm still on duty.
Now then, Evans, the task is quite elementary. You simply print each of these cards with this rubber stamp here, and I've already prepared it.
Right, I might just manage that, sir.
Sit yourself down and make a start, then. You may also reflect that every one of the upright citizens receiving a card is an opponent to the pernicious sport of horse racing.
Would that be so, sir?
Yes. Evans, I feel that I am perhaps an instrument to bring you to the light.
Yes.
But I have one more task myself. The belongings of that unfortunate drunk downstairs must go in the safe. Right, keys and papers. Oh, another gambler, I fear.
What was that, sir?
No, sir, it's just a notebook. Something to do with horse racing. Blue Chuck. What's this? Won the trial by 4 clear lengths. Time 1:39. That would be to do with racing, wouldn't it, Evans?
Yes, sir, I believe that would be to do with racing.
Oh, well, if only all such items were safely under lock and key. Now, to work, Evans. For once, you'll be doing something to cross the hydra-headed monster of gambling.
Yes. Blue Chuck. One trial by 4 lengths. Evans, as Canute quite rightly remarked, my son, the tide has turned.
Evans laboured on. It was the next morning before he finally left Critchley Street police station and happened to be approached by a distressed young woman who was asking directions.
Excuse me, sir. Yeah. Can you help me?
Help Miss Wallet anyway. I'm able, of course.
Oh, I'm so very grateful.
Miss Mazes, forced to spend the night in a most unsalubrious rooming establishment, was now wholly without funds and about to visit George Canfin. After a conversation of some length with the attentive Evans, however, the young woman was able to return directly to Marlborough. While Evans, quietly musing on the strange workings of fate, his pockets the lighter for one silver bracelet.
Mrs. Rankin to see you, sir. Inspector Payne!
Oh.
My good husband has just received this here card.
This card, my dear lady?
Yes, it's his invitation to the Brotherhood's suppression of gambling meeting, Inspector. And I want to know the meaning of it. Look here.
Oh. This is a perfectly straightforward invitation, Mrs. Rankin. It might have been printed at slightly less of an angle, perhaps, but...
Just look on the other side.
What? If any member wants the winner of the Newbury Spring Handicap, send P.O. for 20 shillings to the old, reliable, educated Evans 92 Bay Mews roll-up punters. What a beauty!
Inspector Payne. You've gone quite purple, Inspector.
Good morning, Evans.
Why, Mr. Miller, sir, it's a pleasure as always.
Busy, I'd imagine.
Imagine on, Mr. Miller. New clients signing up by the sackful. That's over 400.
Really?
Everyone a quid.
So I believe. Inspector Payne's on sick leave, I hear.
Never. Well, an honest man, the inspector. He said he'd show me the light, and by heck, I saw it. Take my tip, Mr. Miller. There's no punter like the ones who say they never.
And what would this tip be for the Newbury Spring Handicap?
Blue Chuck. I had it in writing from the owner. Blue Chuck.
Blue Chuck.
Treat yourself, Mr. Miller. Get in before the odds come down, and don't forget you owe me 20 bob. What a beauty. We're talking wealth, Mr. Miller. Wealth. Wealth beyond the dreams of actresses.
But the detective sergeant was no longer listening to Evans. A straw gripped firmly between his teeth. The miller was already 20 yards along Camden High Street and making his way to the offices of Mr. Harry Sefferell, the well-known, commission agent.
You've been listening to Educated Evans by Edgar Wallace, dramatised by Richard Quick, and narrated by Freddie Jones, starring Roy Hudd, Andrew Sachs, Michael Roberts and Pat Coombs, with David Batley as Joe Taskett, Charles Collingwood as George Canfin, Elizabeth Mansfield as Miss Mavis, and Simon Treves as Albert Shanks. The music was by Philip Glassborough and Rick Cardinale, and the programme was produced and directed by Dirk Maggs.